पूज बिहारी जय राधा माधवान पूज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरि वर धारी यशोद नंदन व्रज जन रंजन यशोद नंदन व्रज जन रंजन यशोद नंदन व्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन चारी ययो राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी ययो राधा माधवा गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर यशोदनंदन व्रज जन रंजन यशोदनंदन व्रज जन रंजन यशोदनंदन व्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावन चारी गौराधा माधव जयो राधा माधव राधा माधव जय राधा माधव पंचतत्व जय पंचतत्व जयो नृसिंहदेव 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 जय नृसिंहदेव जयो जय प्रभुपाद प्रभुपाद Jaya Jaya Prabhupada. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Parivrajakacharya Stotra Shata Shri Shriman His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Grantarai Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Itai Gaura Premanande Hari Hari Bo All glories to the Simba devotees All glories to the Simba devotees All glories to the Simba devotees All glories to Shri Shri Guru and Gauranga Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 17, Text 19-21. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya So reading first text 19 Sattvam jighansase kasmad dinam makrita kilbisham ahanishat katam yosham dharmagya itiyo mataham. Translation. The cow-shaped earth continued to appeal to the king. I am very poor and have not committed any sinful activities. I do not know why you want to kill me. Since you are supposed to be the knower of all religious principles, why are you so envious of me? And why are you so anxious to kill a woman? Purport. The earth appealed to the king in two ways. A king who knows the religious principles cannot kill anyone who has not committed sinful activities. Apart from this, a woman is not to be killed, even if she does commit some sinful activities. Since the earth was innocent and was also a woman, the king should not kill her. Text 20. Praharanti na vaistreshu kritaghasu ap kritaghasvapi jantavaham kimuttatvadvidharajam karunadina vatsalaham. Translation. Even if a woman does commit some sinful activity, no one should place his hand upon her. And not to speak of you, dear king, who are so merciful. You are a protector and you are affectionate to the poor. Text 21 is in the board. So let's recite together. Nam Vipatya Jaram Navam Yatra Vishvam Pratishthitam Atmanam Chan Prajas Chimaha Katham Ambhasi Bhasyasi Man Vipatya Jaranavam Man Vipatya Jaranavam Yatra Vishvam Pratishtitam Yatra Vishvam Pratishtitam Atmanam Chaprajashema Atmanam Chaprajashema Katham Ambhasi Dhasyasi Katham Ambhasi Dhasyasi Prabhus Man Vipatya Jaranavam yatra vishvam pratishtitam atmanam cha prajashema katam mam bhasidasyasi. Diz word for word, mam, me, vipatyam, breaking to pieces, ajaram, very strong, navam, boat, yatram, where, vishvam, all worldly paraphernalia. Pratishtitam, standing, atmanam, yourself, chan, and prajaha, your subjects, chan, also, imaha, all these, katam, how, ambhasi, in the water, Asyasi, you will hold. Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. The cow-shaped earth continued. My dear king, I am just like a strong boat, and all the paraphernalia of the world is standing upon me. If you break me to pieces, how can you protect yourself and your subjects from drowning? Please repeat. The cow-shaped earth continued. My dear king, I am just like a strong boat, and all the paraphernalia of the world is standing upon me. If you break me to pieces, how can you protect yourself and your subjects from drawing? Purport. Beneath the entire planetary system is the Garbha water. Lord Vishnu lies on this Garbha water, and from his abdomen a lotus stem grows. And all the planets within this universe are floating in the air, being supported by this lotus stem. If a planet is destroyed, it must fall into the water of Garbha. The Earth therefore warned King Prithu that he could gain nothing by destroying her. Indeed, how would he protect himself and his citizens from drowning in the Garbha water? In other words, outer space may be compared to an ocean of air. And each and every planet is floating on it, just as a boat or island floats on the ocean. Sometimes planets are called dvipa, or islands, and sometimes they are called boats. Thus the cosmic manifestation is partially explained in this reference by the cow-shaped earth. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So I'm reading the three shlokas again. 19. The cow-shaped earth continued to appeal to the king. I am very poor and have not committed any sinful activities. I do not know why you want to kill me, since you are supposed to be the knower of all religious principles. Why are you so envious of me? And why are you so anxious to kill a woman? Even if a woman does commit some sinful activity, no one should place his hand upon her. And what to speak of you, dear king, who are so merciful. You are a protector and you are affectionate to the poor. The cow-shaped earth continued, my dear king, I am just like a strong boat, and all the paraphernalia of the world is standing upon me. If you break me to pieces, how can you protect yourself and your subjects from drowning? So here we have King Prithu chasing the earth. He was reported the situation from his subjects, and the citizens came and said to the king, we are dying, we are burning inside because of hunger, we are starving, so please do something. And the king immediately thought for a long time. He considered the whole situation, tried to understand what's going on, whose fault is this, are the citizens lazy, what is going on wrong. And finally, when he understood that the earth was withdrawing, she was not releasing the nourishment for the citizens, then he decided to chase the earth. And the earth became very scared. And she started running. She took the shape of a cow, right? The demigoddess, the earth planet, started running and took the shape of a cow, hoping that by taking that kind of shape, then the king would not kill her, because a cow should not be killed. So she's in the shape of a cow, she's also a woman. So she thinks that she's innocent. But even if has committed some sinful activity, still no one should place a hand on a woman, even if she is wrong. So she's in that way trying to escape punishment from the king. But King Prithu is showing here that he's very determined to perform his duty as a king. So he has citizens who depend upon him, and he's showing here that he's not going to allow anything to interfere with his duty. So we also should be like that. When we have a duty, we should not accept that anyone or anything opposes that duty. We should be very determined and very strong about accomplishing our duties. No, if someone is disturbing us personally, then we should be very tolerant, we should be very peaceful, we should not react or try to defend ourselves. But if someone tries to interfere with our devotional service, someone tries to stop our duties, then we should be very strong and very determined to fulfill our duty. So King Prithu here was not impressed. He understood that the cow, the earth, is taking that shape just to be like playing some trick, being smart and trying to escape punishment.
But the king is not going to accept that. So he's going to show that I'm not going to accept any excuse or any philosophy in order for you to avoid performing your duties and in order to impede my duties also. So you have your duty to perform. You are a demigod. You are accepting oblations from the citizens. You are performing sacrifice. You are taking that, but you are not giving anything in exchange. And I am the king. I have to make sure that the citizens are getting their maintenance. So no amount of philosophy that you may speak, because the cow is speaking very nice philosophy here. But no amount of philosophy is going to make me give up my duty or allow you to withdraw from your duties. So that was very clear in his attitude towards the earth. So her philosophy is true. She's saying that I am a woman. So a woman, first she's thinking that she's innocent. But even if she's not innocent, still she should not be touched. So I think this point came up a few times, how women, they are not to be punished in the sense that because they are dependent, they are always dependent. If she's a small child, a small girl, she's dependent on the father. So if something goes wrong, you cannot blame the child. Even a boy, no? If the boy does something stupid, who is to be blamed? Now if the boy comes here and throws a stone and breaks the glass, who's going to pay? It's not the boy. It's the father. Because the father is responsible. So the boy does something stupid, why the father is not taking care? So he has to pay. So in the same way, when the woman gets married, then she under the care of the husband. If she does something wrong, the husband is responsible. Why she's allowed to do that? He's not taking care. So the husband is in charge, that means he's responsible. That's the other side of the coin, no? That's the good side of being a woman. It's not your fault. So if it goes wrong, then fault of the husband. And third part is that if she's old, then she has the children to take care of her. And if there is something to explain, something to repair, some problem, the son has to respond. So she made this point, but the king, he knows that the cow is there taking that shape, the earth planet, and trying to avoid delivering what she's supposed to give to the citizens. So he's not going to accept, and he's going to enforce. And actually, the cow is going to explain what is the problem. When she understands that I cannot escape the king, he's very determined, then she's going to explain what is wrong, what's the problem, why I cannot give what the citizens require. And she explains that since the time of King Vena, people have been taken from her so much, but they stopped the sacrifice. You must remember that King Vena, his main problem was that he wanted to stop sacrifice. And the sages are telling him, don't stop sacrifice. And he wants to stop all sacrifice. So if they're taking and taking and taking, but they're not giving anything. They're not offering sacrifice, and they're not offering the results to the Supreme. So the earth is a demigod. All the demigods, they are devotees. And they don't like to see people who try to usurp the riches of material, all the opulence of the material energy, without offering that to the Supreme. So when the earth understood that they're taking everything, they're not offering sacrifice, then she started hiding everything within her, and she was not showing anything. So that was the problem, and King Pritha is going to bring it back to normal. So he's going to reestablish the pious processes of sacrifice, and then the earth will be very happy to deliver everything that people need. So this will be the main teaching of this section. How King Pritha is re-establishing the proper order of things. No? So he's teaching people how to perform sacrifice, and he's then encouraging, in that way the earth is going to be encouraged to deliver everything they need. Everybody is going to get. The sages, they want knowledge, they'll learn how to get knowledge. The demons, they want something, the snakes want something, the demigods, the Gandharvas, everybody wants something from the earth. And all of them are going to get, but in the proper way. Because the earth is just like a cow. And the cows, they deliver milk, which is a product of affection. The affection of the cow makes the cow produce milk. Nothing else. It's not just a machine that you press a button and produces milk. It's out of affection, that affection has the power to transform, to produce that milk in the cow. No, in this regard, there's a story, a real fact, something that happened when I was living in Govardhan. Gopi Parandana Prabhu and his wife, they had more than 10 cows at home. And the cows live in the most of the houses for the cows. And they have a small room where they live. No? It's like a Brajabasi house. Like there's a big courtyard with the all the cows there, other animals also. And then there's a small room with books and a small room where they live, and that's it. So once one of the cows delivered a calf, and a few days after that, another cow also delivered. It was the second calf in just a few days difference. So the son of Gopi Parananda Prabhu and Archanamurti Mataji, he took the calf. As soon as the calf took birth, he took it in his lap and carried it inside the room and put on the bed. And he started cleaning the calf. And his father saying, "What are you doing? Take the calf back. No, how do you put in my bed?" No, let me clean. And then he's cleaning the calf on the bed. And he's playing with the calf and like that, no? So the boy is born and grew up in Govardhan, so he thinks that a cow is for him is a small pet. So he's playing with the calf for a long time, and then after some time, finally he decides to take the calf to his mother. But the problem is that the mother, because she didn't see the calf taking birth, she didn't understand that this is my son. And she couldn't recognize. Usually the cow sees, and then she licks, and she smells, and she takes care, and then she identifies, well, this is my son. But because she didn't see what happened, she felt maybe I just had some stomachache and something came out, and she didn't understand. So when they brought the cow could not understand, and she didn't accept the calf. So she didn't want to feed him. They tried to put him close to the cow's udder, and then the cow would kick the calf and wouldn't give any milk. So then they didn't know what to do, because now this cow, how is it going to survive, no? Such a difficult situation. And then they had an idea. Since there was another cow giving milk to the, because they delivered a few days before, so they managed to put one cow, the original calf, to drink from his mother, and then slowly, very carefully, they took the second one behind, and together they start drinking. And gradually the other cow got accustomed to the second calf. And because she now had two children, she started producing extra milk, and she would give so much milk. And the mother of the second calf wouldn't produce even a drop of milk. So what happened, no? Just out of affection, one cow was producing double amount of milk, another cow is not producing any milk. So then that's the proof that milk comes from the affection the cow has for the calf, not from any other attempt, or any, not artificially. Right? So that was one real story. So here we see the earth. The earth didn't want to give. Why? Because she's not feeling any inspiration to give. These people are coming, they are ripening me, they'll take everything from me. And they're not offering that in sacrifice. So why should I give? And she's withholding everything. But as soon as Prithu Maharaj reestablishes the process of sacrifice, then the cow feels inspired, she starts giving everything in great abundance. And what is the process? The process is, you should approach the cow respectfully, you should bring the calf, let the calf drink first, and then the cow delivers the milk. And then you can take also. But first you come with the right attitude, you bring a calf, and then because of the calf, the earth feels inspired, the calf feels inspired and gives milk. So in that way, all the demigods, all the Gandharvas, even the demons, the sages, everybody is going to come. And they will first present a calf. like someone who's very dear, who's going to endear the cow. So for example, the demons, they take Prahlad Maharaj, even though he's in a family of demons, but he's very dear to everyone. So bringing Prahlad Maharaj, they're going to inspire the earth to give what they want. And like that, everybody's going to follow the same process and they're going to get what they need. So this is actually is a chapter that should be studied very carefully for all those who are interested in ecology. In English you say ecology, like how to protect nature, how to deal with Mother Nature, like that, no? Because here shows that human beings, they have a way that was created by God, no? How we have to deal with the material energy. Material energy, especially the earth planet where we live, it is not just a machine, no? It has also a personality in charge, and if we know how to deal with the earth planet, then we can get everything we need. And there are so many things we can discuss on that regard, but the key word is, how do we say, the opposite of exploitation, be cooperation, service, cooperation. So when you deal with the earth, you have basically two options, no? You can deal in a cooperative mood, in a service mood, or you can deal in an exploitative mood. No? For example, modern people, modern agriculturalists, what they try to do? They try to force the earth to produce. No? Force. They don't care about the earth or the plants or anything. Same thing with the cows. They don't care about the cows. They only try to exploit as much as they can. So they use machines to plow the earth in a very aggressive way. You know, for example, big tractors come and they just clean. If there is an area full of forest, so many trees, so many flowers, so much diversity in nature, and then they come with a tractor and they destroy the whole forest. Or even worse than that, they come and put fire in the forest, they burn down the forest, and then when everything is destroyed, then they come and they do monoculture. That means if they want to plant bananas, they go and they plant extensive lands and lands, so many hectares of bananas. And only that, and nothing more. So what happens? First they put fire. Or they come with a tractor and destroy the whole forest. Then they plant only one thing. Maybe banana, maybe whatever. One thing. Then what happens? They destroy the variety of plants. Not so much diversity of plants that used to live in that area is destroyed. Only one type of plant lives now. And also all the animals that used to live in that forest, they all run away. Because now there is only bananas. So only those animals and bugs and pests that like banana, they will stay. Everybody else is going away. What happens? You have, how do you call it? A pest? A praga? How do you call that? Like one type of bug that because he has no predator, no one to eat him. So he starts multiplying, and he becomes great number, and he is going to destroy the whole thing. Then what comes next? Then they have to put poison. So airplanes come, throwing poison on the plantation. Because there is only one type of plant, therefore there is only one type of bug without any opposition, without any competitor. Now the bug is eating the banana, now throw poison. Okay, so now everything is full of poison. Then, because the fire was put, and the quality of the earth, the soil was spoiled, or because the tractors walking up and down, they make the soil hard, it's very heavy, it makes it hard. Then, because of that, what happens? The quality of the soil is poor, and it cannot produce properly. So what's next? Chemical composting. No? So much chemical on the ground to make it produce, because this soil is so poor, it's not producing, so you have to put chemical. That's just to make short, no? The whole thing is spoiled. It's a whole artificial, trying to force the earth to produce, instead of understanding that there is a natural process. If you follow that, it's going to produce very nicely. So what's the other option? Cooperation. So you're going to deal with Mother Earth, you're going to deal with plants. So I'm giving the example of banana trees because I lived in a farm in Brazil where the devotees, they plant so much banana. So for 3 years in my life, I planted thousands and thousands and thousands of banana trees. And these trees, when they grow, when you see a bunch of banana trees, it's not a bunch of trees, it's actually one tree under the ground, and there's like a big potato like this, and from that root comes many, we call the banana trees, no, but actually they are branches of that one plant. So when one plant produces fruit, you cut it down, you cut up, and then all the liquid, like the juice, comes back into the root and goes to another branch grows, and then produces fruit. Then you cut, reabsorbs all that liquid, and then goes to another branch. It's one plant, right? So how do you plant banana? You take one small branch, you cut it, and you plant it another place, right? Then that small branch grows, and many others start coming. So we used to do that. Take so many of these baby banana trees, put in boxes, and carry it to another place, and then we would make holes, put composting, put the banana trees, put compost, then put some hay or leaves around to keep the humidity of the soil, the water from drying. So a whole process. So we had a system that one devotee was making the holes, another one is carrying the banana seedlings, another one is carrying compost, and all like in the head, because it was in the mountain area, like hills. So we carry different people doing different things. So one make the hole, one puts the compost, one puts some ashes also to help. Another one puts the banana tree, another one covers the banana tree, another one puts some grass around. So it's a teamwork. And if one person would forget, then it's a problem. No? Let's say one person puts the banana tree, another one forgets to cover. Then it's going to die, right? So the devotee in charge, he was very conscientious, very careful about the service. He would consider that these plants, they are not just machines, they are living entities. And I am taking responsibility for each of these banana trees because I'm taking them from their mother and I'm planting them in another place. So he was very careful about that. No? So after the whole day working, in the evening, almost sunset, then he would go alone checking hole by hole if everything is right. No? He'll check, okay, is the banana tree there, the compost is there, the mud, the grass, everything is fine. And if something is wrong, he's going to fix and then go to the next plant and go one by one, checking. And I used to get annoyed with him, that it's so late, let's go back, take shower, let's take prasada, so late. And everybody's tired, no? Then after a few days doing that, then one day he said, see, every day you tell me, let's go quickly. But today, someone forgot to take the seedling and put in the hole, and then the whole process was stopped. So one seedling was just forgotten on the ground, and no one was taking, it was going to die, no? So he said, whose responsibility is this, no? We are doing this, it's our responsibility, it's my responsibility, first of all. So he had that sense of responsibility that if I am taking care of these plants, I have to do it properly. And then there's no chemical, there's nothing artificial, but the banana trees are so healthy, so big, they produce huge, like the banana branch was so heavy, no? Like to carry one of those things, no? It had to be a very strong man. Very, very healthy banana trees. And not only the banana trees, we had so many types of trees, we had vegetable garden, everything was flourishing. So once a group of people from the agronomy university, they came to visit our place. They heard the glories of the Hare Krishna's plantation and they came to see. And they are very impressed that your plantation is so nice, no? Everything is so healthy and all the trees and the plants, the fruits, the sabji, everything is growing so nicely. What do you do? No, what's the secret? And he would say, attention. We give them personal attention to each plant. No, but okay, what kind of fertilizer are you using? What type of this or that? And no, we don't use any fertilizer. We don't use any chemical. Then it's not possible. What do? No, we give attention. So there are plants, they have needs, no? And we look at their needs. How can you serve these plants? Or they need more water, so let's arrange for them to get more water. Or they need more sunlight, so let's cut some branches of the big trees. Because we would not cut down the forest. the forest was preserved, and inside the forest we would plant the banana trees, and everything else was a kind of agroforest. So without cutting down the trees, we would just clean a little bit the grass, cut the branches to make space for the sunlight to come, and we would plant everything inside the forest. So that was a very amazing concept, because people could not understand, why don't you come and cut all the forest down, or put fire in the forest, as they usually do in Brazil? No, because then you are destroying the whole thing, you're spoiling the ground. All the nutrients, the nourishment of the ground, you're destroying by the fire. So basically the idea is that we are trying to serve the plants, right? You try to understand, they are plants, they need water, they need sunlight, they need good soil, and you try to understand that, you try to serve, and in exchange the plants are giving back so much. They're happy, they're healthy, they are flourishing, right? So that was the thing. No, it's not a process of exploitation, it's a process of service, cooperation. Let's cooperate with Mother Nature. You have the cows, same thing, no? You don't try to exploit the cow, to put some machine to suck the milk by force. No, you treat the cow very nicely. And the cow is happy, and the cow is giving milk, and the cow, some cows in ISKCON farms, they give milk even without having calves, because they feel so much affection for the devotees. No? There are cases like that in ISKCON farms. So, that's the basic principle, no? Develop the mentality of understanding this is Krishna's property, so we should not exploit the earth, the animals, the plants. We should try to cooperate with them in the service of Krishna. And then the plants will be very happy, the cows will be very happy to give in abundance everything so that you can offer them to the Lord. So that's the whole idea, the philosophy of Prithu Maharaj. He's going to teach that in these chapters. We're going to see in more detail as we progress through this section. Okay, so just before we stop, I'd like just to mention, today is also the disappearance day of Baladev Vidyabhushan. So everybody here, I'm sure you know the glories of Baladev Vidyabhushan and how he presented our Siddhanta and defended the Gaudiya Vaishnavas in Jaipur, and was inspired by Lord Govinda to write the Govinda Bhashya, our commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. So Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan ki jai. And it's also the appearance day of Ganga Mata Goswamini. So maybe she's not so as well known as Baladev Vidyabhushan. I'll speak a few words. She was named Shachi Devi, and she was a princess by birth. But she was very attracted to Krishna, to the deity of Madan Gopal from childhood, and she could not think of any other person to give her heart to. So when she became a young girl, she was very attractive, very intelligent, very amazing personality. The parents wanted to marry her, but she said, "I'm sorry, I'm not going to accept anyone except Krishna as my husband." So the parents, they became very disturbed, very depressed, and finally they died. So sad they became, they died. And she became the heir. And the kingdom was hers, but she was not interested in ruling the kingdom. So she gave the responsibility to the relatives, and she left. So she went first to Jagannath Puri, and in Jagannath Puri she felt inspired to go to Vrindavan. So reaching Vrindavan, he met a great Vaishnava called Haridas Pandita. And he told her, "Look, you're a princess. Your body is too fragile to live in Vraja. And you cannot live in a poor condition and doing Madhukari, it's not for you. So go back to your house and do bhajan. Worship Krishna there. That's the best you can do." But she didn't listen to that, and she instead stayed in Vraja in a very austere way, chanting Hare Krishna, doing parikramas. And then after some time, when he saw that she's very serious, she's not going to give up, so he called her back and said, "Look, I'm very happy to see your renunciation, your sincerity, so I want to give initiation." And not only he gave initiation, but there was another Mataji who was very austere also, who used to chant 3 lakhs a day. And he told, "Okay, both of you together, you stay here in Radhakunda, and you do parikrama of Govardhana every day, and you worship Krishna here, and you do Madhukari, and be fully dependent on the Lord. So they did that for some time, and she was every day in that austere sadhana, chanting so many rounds, doing parikrama of Govardhana every day, and she was also listening to Bhagavatam class from the Goswamis, from the sadhus there at Radhakunda. So she became very learned and very empowered, very strong Vaishnava. And then when her guru understood that she became very pure in her sadhana, her bhajana was very pure. So he told her, I wanted to go to Jagannath Puri and I wanted to speak Bhagavatam there. Because he understood, she got the point, she got the real mood, she's very pure, so she's powerful, I want you to go there and I want you to spread the message of Lord Chaitanya in Jagannath Puri. So receiving the order, she went to Puri and she started living in the remains of the house of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had a big house, but it was abandoned, so everything was broken, and she went to live there. So she started speaking Bhagavatam as she was instructed by her guru, and many people started coming, and she became very popular. People are appreciating a lot her speeches on Srimad Bhagavatam. So one day the king came, and even the king was very impressed with her explanation of Srimad Bhagavatam. So he appreciated that. And after some time came the time for Ganga Puja. And she was very desirous of going to Ganga Puja. Like today. Today is Ganga Puja. She wanted to go to the Ganga. The Ganga is not flowing there in Jagannath Puri. So she considered traveling to Ganga, to bathe in Ganga. But then she remembered that my Guru Maharaj told me to stay in Puri and speak Bhagavatam, so how can I go elsewhere without his permission? Then she gave up the idea and she went to sleep. But then in her dream, Jagannatha came. And Jagannatha told her that, you don't worry, Ganga will become manifest here in Jagannath Puri. You go to the place next to this house of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, there is a lake called Shweta Ganga. So you go to the Shweta Ganga and take your bath there. Ganga Devi will personally come to have your darshan. So at midnight, she went to the Ganga, to the Shweta Ganga alone. And she was ready to swim in the Shweta Ganga. So when she came to the banks, the water of the Ganga became manifest in the Shweta Ganga. In a mystic water. It's difficult to understand how it happened. But the waves of the Ganga picked Shachidevi up and started pushing her towards the Jagannath Mandir. Finally, she saw herself inside the Jagannath temple, and so many people are taking bath in the Ganga. There is such a tumultuous sound. So many people taking bath. But these people are also not ordinary people. Somehow, all these people are there, but suddenly, the guards of the temple, they heard some sound coming from inside the temple. They opened, and they found Shachidevi alone inside the altar. So they thought she's just a thief. She came to steal, and then they arrested Shachidevi, put her in the prison. But then the king was informed. No, the king had a dream that Jagannatha came very angrily and told him, how can you do that? You go immediately and release Shachidevi. She's my devotee. Ganga came personally to see her. And you put her in prison. That's a great offense. You go and not only release her, but you fall down at her lotus feet and you take initiation from her. You and all your pandas of the Jagannath temple. So the king came with all the priests and they all offered dandavats. They took initiation from her and they asked forgiveness. So that's the story of Ganga Mata Goswamini. From that time she became Ganga Mata. Okay? So it's a great personality in Jagannath Puri. When you go, you can go there and see the Shweta Ganga, and you can also see the house where Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya lived, and then later on became the Ganga Mata Goswamini's mat. She is still there, the place. Okay, so Ganga Mai ki jai, Shri Ganga Mata Goswamini ki jai, Shri Baladeva Vida Bhushan ki jai, Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Nitai Gaura Premanande Hari Hari Bol. Any questions? Yes.
Mother Earth, I heard yesterday, I think, or day before yesterday, that Mother Earth is a consort of Varahadev. Therefore, she is actually the internal potency of the Lord.
She is the external potency.
Internal potency.
Internal.
Being a consort of Varahadev. Mm. So she is not a demigoddess, so to speak. She is actually an eternal associate of the Lord. She is the internal energy of the Lord. Now, Prithu Maharaj, although he is an incarnation of the Lord, he is...
I didn't know that. She is the internal energy. She cannot be external energy and be a consort of the Lord?
Varahadev is actually Vishnu Tattva, yeah. And the consort of Vishnu Tattva is generally the internal potency, because Vishnu does not touch the external energy.
Okay, so she is the internal potency of Vishnu because she is married with Varahadev, consort of Varahadev, okay?
And she is also one of the energies, like Shri Bhu Nila, like it is said that Bhu Shakti is one of the consorts. So my question is, if she is a consort of the Lord, an internal potency of the Lord, and whereas Prithu Maharaj is only a Shaktyavesh avatar, he's a Jiva. So how can he be so powerful as to even try to kill Mother Earth, who is actually a consort of the Lord? And I have another question, should I ask?
Okay, that's a good question. I don't know the answer. Anyone has any idea how to understand that she is a consort of the Lord and a Shaktivesh avatara can have the potency to kill her? Because he's a Shaktivesh avatara, then he's empowered by the Lord. But, yeah, I don't know, I could think more about that. I never thought of that. Okay, the second question.
The second one is a simple question, that is, Ganga Mata Goswamini, what is her original position in Krishna Leela?
What is her?
Swarupa in Krishna Leela. Who is she? Is she Ganga Devi herself or is she some personality in Krishna Leela?
If she is some personality in Krishna Leela, I don't know. Good questions, but I don't know either of them. Sorry. Anyone knows what's her position, Krishna Leela, if she has revealed? In the biography I read, this was not mentioned. Jenny Vasparamu?
She has form of a prema, vara manjari. Prembara manjari.
What's her name?
She appears as the daughter of Nityananda and Vasudeva. Today is also the appearance of Gangadasi.
Janavi is also an expansion of Ganga. Sorry, I couldn't hear fully.
Her name is Gangadasi. She appeared as the daughter of Vasudeva and Nityananda Prabhu.
Okay.
And her original form is Premavara Manjari in Krishna Leela.
Okay. Thank you, Prabhu.
And she comes and takes birth here.
Okay. Satisfied? Okay, so very special personality.
And the first question. If the Lord is having a relationship with Mother Earth, and we can understand it's probably in the form of His Shakti, His internal potency, for whom the Bhu Shakti, the Earth, is a manifestation of the Bhu Leela, different potencies of the Lord, but in their original features they are internal potency. Sri Bhu Leela, these purposes. Whereas Bhu, yeah? Bhu is the earth?
Yeah.
So the earth is a manifestation of Bhudevi. So if the Lord has a relationship, he'll have a relationship with his internal potency. Uh-huh. Bhudevi is an expansion. It doesn't mean he has to have a relationship with Mother Earth, practically. But with the source of Mother Earth, Bhudevi, who's a Lakshmi, internal potency.
Okay, so he has a relationship with the source of the earth, which is Bhudevi.
Yeah, because Vishnu doesn't touch matter, he only touches spirit.
And the earth planet personified then is another personality that comes and prays to the Lord, for example, is a different one from that one who is the consort of the Lord, the one who comes in the ocean of milk and prays to Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, or Kshirodakshaya Vishnu. That's a separate, different personality?
Yeah, it appears that
Okay. Would there be another problem?
So, Prabhuji, we know if you commit some offense when you Lord, Vaishnava, or anything, we can advance in the devotional service. But my question is that if you commit some sinful activity while practicing the devotional service, so how the sinful activity act up in our devotional service?
How the sinful activity what? How the sinful activity, devotional service, I'm missing one word. Affects our devotional service. Like, if you try to light fire and put water at the same time, it doesn't work, no? Because the water, you're trying to put fire, at the same time you're throwing water. So, it's incompatible. So, in the same way, you want to be a devotee, at the same time you want to be a demon. It's incompatible. No? You want to do something which is making you advance spiritually, at the same time want to do something that pulls you down. So, it's incompatible. And so you have to give up the sinful activity and then you can advance. And so devotional service, you can practice along with pious activities, but you cannot practice devotional service with impious activity. It's not like, if someone, there are three options, no? You can just practice transcendental devotional service. It's nothing but Shravana, Kirtan, Smarana, Vandana, all the nine transcendental processes, and you're only directly engaged in that service. That's one option. Second option is you can perform transcendental devotional service as much as you can, but if you cannot do 24 hours only that, and you also have some material desire, then you fulfill those desires in a pious way. Okay, you want to have a wife, you want to enjoy with a woman, okay, you get married, and in a pious way you do that. But you cannot, so that's another option. You have desire, so there is a system. And in the pious way, following Varnashrama principle, following the rules given by the Lord, then you deal with the material energy and you fulfill your desires in that way, piously. But if you try to do devotional service and act impiously, then it doesn't work. You cannot try to perform devotional service at the same time try to commit many sinful activities and like that. Doesn't work, because then it's like you're throwing water on the fire. That was the question?
No, also sometimes you see some non-devotee, also they're doing some devotional activity. At the same time, they're committing some sinful activity. So what will their destination?
What will be what? Destination. If a non-devotee, he does some devotional activity, that becomes a kind of pious, spiritual credit for him. It's a bhakti sukriti. And that will bring him to the point of becoming a devotee. But then he has to give up sinful activities. That punya, that spiritual punya, that bhakti sukriti that he performs unknowingly, even along with sinful activities, that will give him entrance into devotional service. Because it's just like a snowball. You know, a snowball sometimes Here there's no snow and there's no mountain. But if you go to a mountain full of snow and you make a small ball and it starts rolling and rolling and rolling, gradually gets weight, it starts rolling by itself and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger until it becomes a full avalanche. Yeah? So if you do some sinful activity, then the Nectar of Devotion explains, no? That this sinful activity has two results. One is that you suffer some sinful reaction. Another one is that you are producing seeds for more sinful activity. So that, let's say you never told a lie in your life. Then one day you decide to speak a small lie. So that small lie will bring you a small reaction. At the same time, you bring seeds for speaking more lies. That means the next time that something happens, it will be easier for you to speak another lie. Because I already did once, so what's the big thing? Yes, one more time I speak a lie, and one more time, and more bigger and bigger lie. So it becomes bigger and bigger, like a snowball, and the sinful reaction becomes bigger, and gradually you have a snow, a whole avalanche of sinful reaction, and you're carried away by that. On the other hand, if you do a small devotional service, someone does a very small thing for Krishna, then by that small devotional service, he feels a little bit of bliss, right? In the heart, because Krishna reciprocates. Oh, this person, even though he's so fallen, but he did that small service for me, Krishna reciprocates, and he gets a little taste. So then he wants to do a little more. Then he, a little more, a little more, a little more, finally he's overcome, and he only wants to do devotional service. So that's why you should try to engage people in some kind of devotional service. Now, if you can make a person buy one book, chant the Maha Mantra one time, eat some prasada, anything, no? That is the start. It's like a sparkle. And from that, everything starts. And then the person can become a devotee. So you should take advantage of that process of becoming a devotee and should be careful with the sinful activities, because if you do some... It said that one... That's by a Christian saint. He said... Like, I don't remember how he phrased the thing was, but the idea was that if you practice one virtue, that one virtue will gradually attract other virtues. And if you become attached to one sin, that sin will bring you to commit other kinds of sins also. So it's like magnet, yeah? It attracts. So you have to take advantage of the good things and avoid, be careful with the bad things. Yes, Mataji? The third one is try to perform bhakti at the same time sinful activity. That doesn't work. Only two things work. Pure bhakti or bhakti with varnashrama, pious activities, dharma. But bhakti with a dharma doesn't go. Only in the sense that you are a sinful person and then you practice a little bit of bhakti, that can be the beginning of becoming a devotee. Okay? Any other questions, comments? Thank you very much. Grantaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.